You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm Joe Casey, and I'll be joined shortly by Dennis Wissman. Retirement's a two-sided coin. We work on helping people with how to invest their time once they retire, and others help people on the foundational aspect of how to invest on the financial side and prepare wisely. Our guest today, Stephen Chen, is the founder and CEO of New Retirement, an online retirement planning service focused on helping people prepare for and make the most of their resources in retirement. His experience spans financial services, education, investing, and retirement planning across firms that include Charles Schwab, Wells Fargo, Embark, SEC Ventures, and Dimensional Fund Advisors. Stephen has worked in Fortune 500 firms and has also started venture-backed firms that have raised $40 million in capital. He's an honors graduate from Boston University with a Bachelor of Science in Systems Engineering. So, Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Joe, thanks for having me on here. I appreciate the opportunity.
So please tell us a story of how you became interested in retirement planning and how you created a new retirement.
Sure. So, yeah, the way this came about is that, you know, my mom came to my brother and I when she was in her early 60s. And, you know, she said, like, you know, I think this happens in a lot of families. She needed some financial help. Specifically, she, you know, needed to borrow some money. And so we were like, sure, of course, we can help you, but can we take a look at what's happening? And then luckily she was cooperative and she said, sure, take a look. And so when we kind of dug into her situation, you know, we found out that her need was being driven by credit cards. So she had actually used, like many people, credit cards to kind of bridge her situation. And you know, she was a white collar worker, small business owner, college educated. So she's not an unsophisticated person. You know, we looked around and said, okay, well, first, actually, we tried to find someone that could help her, like a financial advisor that would take on her case, because we were both busy. But we couldn't really find anybody that was that interested in her because she didn't have a ton of money. You know, she had single digit hundreds of thousands of dollars, not like $500,000 or $1 million. So a lot of financial advisors weren't that interested. And also many folks weren't very focused on decumulation. They're more focused on accumulation. So my brother and I dove into it with spreadsheets and kind of did the best we could. And then when we looked at her situation, we kind of figured out that this wasn't like a saving and investing problem. This was a expense and use of assets situation where we needed to help her really be thoughtful about how to use her money to make it last for quite a long time, because there's longevity in our family. Like, my grandmother lived till 94, and a lot of people in our family live a long time. So we ended up doing it ourselves. And in the course of doing this, we looked around and said, oh, wow, there's 75 million baby boomers out there. There's a lot of folks that retirement's like the number one financial concern that people have, and finances are the number one concern people have in general. So we said, okay, there's probably an opportunity to build something, but do it in a software first way. And just by way of backstory, I, you know, earlier in my career, I started a company. It was about the transition to higher education. So we had built a software as a service company that put the whole process of inquiring and applying to college online and financial aid and everything else. You know, this was back in the late 90s. And so we thought, okay, there's an opportunity to create a similar kind of business around the transition to retirement to help people figure out this whole process of retiring.
What do you see as the biggest ways in which retirement is different today?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of big drivers here. So one is longevity. So, you know, I was actually looking at this data in preparation for this podcast. So life expectancy has gone up, well, went up 5.5 years between 2000 and 2016, which was the fastest increase since the 1960s. And in general, it's been going up about 10 years. People are living 10 years longer per 40 years of time for the past 200 years. I'll send you the link in Nature where I found this. But so people are definitely living longer. That's a big thing. I think also demographics, right? So in 2019, there were 700 million people over age 65 in the world, right? About 10% of the population. And that number is going to double to 1.5 billion people by 2050. So over the next 30 years, you know, it's just, there's this huge number of people worldwide, especially in developed countries that are first world countries like the US and Japan and the EU, right? There's just many more older folks that are around living longer. So that's going to be a big part of the population. And this also goes to work, right? Which is what you guys do and how we got connected. I saw some stats that 1 out of 3 workers are now over 50, and that's up 20% over 10 years. And over the next 10 years, the number of people under 50 is going to decrease, while the number of people over 50 is going to increase more, another 20%. So, you know, there's huge changes across longevity demographics and work. And so I also think finally technology is playing a big part of this, where costs are coming down. They've been coming down in financial services in general, with mutual fund fees coming down and transaction fees coming down. And we think the cost of advice and guidance is going to come down a lot as well, just because it has to. So many people need help, and it just needs to get a lot cheaper and easier for people to get this help, to figure out their own situation, because there's just not enough advisors to go around. And there's such a huge opportunity for people to do better if they are a little bit more thoughtful about their money. Just like you guys help people be really thoughtful about their time. I think there needs to be scalable solutions on both fronts.
Makes sense. And what do you see as the key building blocks of a sound retirement plan?
Sure. First, it's just having a plan, right? So getting organized and kind of seeing what's possible. So for many folks, healthcare is the number one thing they're thinking about when they're looking at the transition to retirement. So, and there's kind of two parts of that. Three parts. There's the healthcare you get while you're working, which people take for granted. Then there's usually a gap between when you're working and before Medicare. And then there's your plan for Medicare. But there's thinking about your healthcare. There's thinking about your income, right? So how do you claim Social Security? How do you draw your assets tax efficiently? How do you manage risk in your portfolio and in your own situation? So there's different ways you can hedge risk in your portfolio, and there's ways you can use other resources you have, like home equity or potentially annuitizing to guarantee some income. So there's different ways you can do stuff like that. And I think another huge part of this is, like, you know, we've talked about in the past, it's like having something to retire to, right? So what are you going to do with your time, which is your scarcest resource, right? What are you going to, so you're something to look forward to and transition into, versus like, hey, I'm going to go play golf all the time. And most people burn out of that pretty quickly. And then I think you're the one, right? You have this, what's the factoid that you share around, like, how quickly people get back to work?
So there's a study done by AgeWave, Ken Dickwald and Maddie Dickwald's firm, that they did in conjunction with a company that Dennis and I used to work for many years, Merrill Lynch. And they found that it's 2.5 years on average that people spend after retirement before they figure out what they really want to do next. And that's the average. And that's a pretty long vacation. It sounds pretty good when you're coming off of work, but when you're in it after that honeymoon period, it's a pretty long stretch, particularly when you think, again, that you don't have unlimited amounts of time.
Yeah, I talk about that idea with a number of folks. I think it's definitely true. And we see it in our community, where people are asking a lot more now about, okay, what are people doing with their time, and what's a good way to do that? And a couple of other quick things is, I'm planning, it's, you know, prioritizing what you need to work on to do better. And then I think one of the big things is also getting support. So I feel like there's a huge analogy with getting in shape or losing weight, right? It's simple to do in theory, but not easy to do. It's hard to do, right? Like, and a lot of folks, they do need, like, I don't do push-ups really, unless someone's like kind of yelling at me to do push-ups. And I feel like making financial changes or being thoughtful about what you're new with work, like what you guys do, and your time, it's super helpful to have a coach alongside you, kind of asking you smart questions, someone who's been through the process before. So we try to provide that, and also hook people up with other experts like yourself to get help along the way.
You mentioned risk before, and I just want to follow up, if I could, Steve. What do you see as some of the key risks that people need to account for when they're planning for retirement?
I think the big ones are definitely healthcare. So healthcare costs. A lot of folks really don't appreciate how expensive healthcare is in this country, and how it's been rising faster than inflation for couple decades. I mean, I saw a friend of mine was just sharing on, who's a doctor, was just sharing that, like, hey, if you look at healthcare spending in the US, it's like bigger than the economies, the GDPs of several developed countries. So it's just super expensive. So thinking about that, inflation, how that can eat away at your spending power, especially if you're looking at a 20 or 30 year time horizon, that's material. That's probably one of the biggest risks we have out there. I mean, right now it's muted, but it could definitely come back. And then given some of the debt stuff that's happening in this country, and then long-term care. So that's another big cost. And, you know, I think it's like a third of people are going to need long-term care at some point in their lives. And there's other risks, like with your portfolio, sequence of return. There's a whole host of risks that people face in decumulation that they don't face when they're accumulating because they don't have the time, and they're also they're not making money from income from work. So they can't hedge that investing risk the way they could when they were working. So it's kind of a different science. And, you know, that's what we focus on in our, you know, planning business.
And it's a big switch psychologically too, going from accumulating to the drawdown and spending as opposed to investing and saving.
For sure. I mean, when you talk to people, we talk to our users, like as they head into retirement, there's a lot of this one more year syndrome where they're like, should I really retire? I think I should keep working for another year, right? They're making a fair amount of money. They want to keep saving. And it's hard to know when to stop, right? Because you don't know how long you're going to live. And it's like, you can pile up some more money. But then on the flip side, I think as people age, they're definitely hearing more stories or seeing, you know, in their circle of friends, like, hey, someone got sick or someone just died or something. And they're like, wow, I may not have unlimited time here. And I've definitely seen this firsthand myself, where people who had tons of money and had these huge plans, someone gets sick or someone passes away. And then suddenly, you know, your kind of big plan for the next 10 years gets totally blown up and you have to rethink everything, and money becomes much less important at that point.
I actually saw it 2 years ago, a colleague of mine who had gone on to a second career that was passion-driven, purpose-driven, and he went back to school, shifted, was all set, and then he said, no, I'm really into this. He did it for about 4 or 5 years, and then he used to always say, I'm just going to do this for one more year. Yep. And literally, I used to tease him, so, okay, is this going to be the year? And then one January, I ran to him as I did some coaching work at his company. And he said, this is it. I've got a date. This is the year. And he just couldn't pull the trigger. And literally, I find myself in this downpour going into a church. And out in front, there was a red Porsche, literally. And the whole son did the eulogy and talked about how he parked out there intentionally because he just wants people to always remember and don't put it off, because his father had dreamed about spending a year at the Jersey Shore, where he had a house and never got to spend much time there all those years. But this was the year he was going to do it. So it's a good reminder.
Steve, your blog on your website does touch on some non-financial aspects when you talk to people. What are the key things that you hear from people besides, you know, where they're going to spend their time, about what they're concerned about on the non-financial side?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think definitely healthcare comes up, staying healthy is a big part of this, that you're seeing more people kind of think, be thoughtful about how they stay in shape. But also with COVID and coronavirus, there's a lot of awareness of that. And definitely there's a different behavior with people that are, call it over 60, 50, 60, and then people who are younger. Definitely people who are over 60 are taking this super seriously, as they should, and changing their lifestyle and their social stuff pretty dramatically. We're definitely seeing people ask community for ideas for how to spend their time, if it's volunteering or if it's work or starting companies, you know, just being, I think being thoughtful about purpose, that it's worth it to take some time and think about, you know, how you're going to spend your own time, where you want to see that invested and what you want to see the result of that time be. I know that for my mom, she, you know, she did a bunch of work with immigrants, with related to her church or congregation that she's part of. She started doing some language stuff, some stuff with music and poetry that she'd always wanted to do. So I think she's seeing that in her own life. And those are some of the questions that come up for folks. How about you guys? You definitely are talking to folks on the, on the career and purpose side.
So a lot of people are interested in what we refer to as a portfolio life. They're retiring, but they're not quite done yet, but they don't want to go at it again full-time, but they're looking for, what can I do that gives me a chance to apply my skills in a different way, but also I can have flexibility and take advantage of the freedom that retirement offers. So that's a big thing. I used to say no one ever comes to me as a coach to help them with purpose, but it always ends up that way. But I did have one client actually come and said, I need to find a new purpose. But for most people, that's under the radar, but emerges, you know, through the work. And people end up usually finding something that they really care about, that they start to get involved in, that really creates this new purpose, often connected to them being more socially connected as well.
Yeah, for sure. I've been watching Fritz Gilbert over at the Retirement Manifesto. He's got a strong plan, but his wife is involved with dog rescue, and now it looks like he's hooking into that in a big way. I know they're building a new space for that, and
yes,
they're traveling around supporting that stuff. I mean, it's pretty cool to watch that, right, and see him get engaged in that. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Like finding ways that also keep you socially connected. I'd say one other thing that's kind of like the many people talk about this, but travel. People are talking about travel. I think there's a lot of pent up demand for people. They do want to travel, but they haven't been able to. And so they're trying to think about what it's going to look like. A lot of folks do like cruising, but you know, they're also RVing and getting out there and seeing their family and whatnot. But it's going to evolve. Like that's going to be different, I think.
I think evolving, and the fact that you talk about, certainly about Fritz, he's been sharing his journey and the things he's learning and how he's looking at his retirement as a journey. And he's adjusting as he goes along. I think that's really important. And people that I talk to, shifting identity, is a big thing. I come out of work all these years and I've just identified myself as X and that's what I do for a living. Whereas really, Joe talked a little bit about purpose, and when people start to think about purpose a little bit, their purpose could be their new identity in a lot of ways for them. And they have to take some time to think about that. And it's not an easy thing to get to, but it can provide really good value for people. And the other thing is the mindset shift that they're not really used to, that they're not sure that they have to make, or they don't know what that means. And when I think about mindset, I think about attitude, I think about flexibility, I think about you just have to approach this time of life differently.
And one thing I see with purpose is that it's not something you can really read a book about or find by, going to a 3-day weekend in the mountains. It's really something you discover by doing. And I came across that from people in your neck of the woods, the two guys at Stanford, Dave Evans and Bill Burnett, who wrote the book Design Your Life. They certified a bunch of coaches, including myself. And that's been a game changer for clients I work with to actually start getting involved in some pilots and experiments to find out what that passion is, because it evolves over time, not something you can conjure up on your own.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I mean, when we're building the company, we follow something called the Lean Startup Method, which is essentially you have a vision for where you're going, but along the way, there's a bunch of milestones and you're creating kind of these hypotheses of things that you think will work to help grow your business, right? And then what you do is you come up with these hypotheses and then you test them. So you're trying to test them as cheaply and quickly as you can. But I think that idea applies to your life too, right? You're like, okay, well, I think I might like being a travel director or leading people on adventures, right? Or I want to do dog rescue or whatever, but fine, come up with it, try it out, see if you like it. If you don't like it, also get away from it, right? Because I think a lot of people, when they're going through their life, they're like, so much of our lives are programmed, right? See us with our kids, it's like, hey, okay, you're going to get educated, you're going to do sports, you're going to go to college, right? You're going to get a job, and then you do your whole life, right? It's like, take a minute to like think about it and try different things. And if you find yourself doing something you're not happy, or you're asking yourself, am I really happy or I'm not? If you're asking yourself these questions, I think it's a good time to take a break and like think about this, because
yes,
this happens all through our lives about just kind of going from one thing to the next and wanting to be busy. But you only have your one life and you only have every minute, and then it's gone and you can't get it back. So being thoughtful about how you're spending that time is super important.
So occasionally we have some people too that we work with who want to move from the corporate world to start their own business in their next chapter. And since you've really been a successful entrepreneur more than once with startups, any advice that you'd offer people who might be thinking about becoming an entrepreneur for the first time later in life?
That's a great question. And by the way, I'm a huge supporter of entrepreneurs in general. I talk to a lot of my friends and people I know about starting companies. I mean, for sure. I think people should try it, right? I think that personally, I have found it super fulfilling, because you can combine something that, you get to kind of pick what you want to do, right? So you're like, okay, here's a problem I want to take on. And then you pick who you want to do it with, because you're bringing together the team around that as well. So there's all these great things about starting a company that, you know, you have purpose, you have people you like, you know, you have a problem that you think is interesting and hopefully is meaningful to the world and to you. And ideally you can make money. It's a great way to make money because you're leveraging yourself up versus if you're working for, you know, just trading time for money. So there's all these great things, but with all the good things, there's also a ton of risk with it of, you can get wrecked. I mean, it's hard, right? And there's a lot of failure. And I mean, for every Uber you read about or Mark Zuckerberg, there are literally millions of people who have tried and failed. And so, I mean, if you look at the pyramid of success, I was actually just looking at this because we got some institutional money. And I was like, okay, guess what? Like 0.7% of firms ever get venture or institutional money. It's super low. And then even then, even once you do that, there's like a 1 in 1,000 chance that you're going to have meaningful success. So just be ready for that, right? And I think manage your risk. A lot of folks, they try to only self-fund. I think that it's actually, you want to have some of your own skin in the game, but you also, this is where friends and family come in. Like getting it off the ground, usually it's like kind of going around hat in hand to your friends and family. They're like, hey, listen, we'll over and pitch in, you know, 10 or 20 grand. We're going to try and put together $100,000 to $200,000 and get this thing rolling and be well aware that you could lose all your money and, you know, consider it a donation, but share the risk with other people. Because if you stick, especially if you worked your whole life and then you plow everything into a startup and you haven't done it before, be ready to kiss a lot of that money goodbye or all of it. And think about that in advance because you don't want to do this and then kind of wreck lifetime hard work as well. So I guess those are some of the things. But I'd be happy to, you know, we could do a whole podcast on this probably.
No, sure. It's another risk. And I appreciate you highlighting because that's really important to be aware of the risk. But it is an avenue for some people if they focus on it in the right way. And we talked about the risks, and I was wondering if we could go to the expense side. What expenses do you see that people aren't planning for adequately in retirement, but they really should be?
Yeah, I think it's healthcare, long-term care, their own longevity, I think are big things. You know, they may need to move as well. But I think the biggest one is probably the unexpected long-term care thing that can happen where someone gets sick, needs to go into a care facility or has a stroke. And if they're not ready and they haven't planned for it, that can get very expensive for them and their family. We did a whole podcast with Cameron Huddleston on this where she was dealing this with her mom who got early onset Alzheimer's and she was like in her mid-30s and then she was like, you know, because her estate docs weren't in order, power of attorney and the healthcare directives and all that stuff, and, you know, weren't ready. And then, you know, if your probate stuff isn't ready, it like ends up being super expensive to kind of put that in place on the fly. So that can catch a lot of people. I mean, the one good thing is your costs generally do decline. That the data is that your expenses decline 1% per year on average. Once you retire. So over a decade, your costs will go down 10% on a real basis. So if you spend $100,000 a year living, 10 years later, you're spending $90,000 on a real basis. But, you know, with inflation, the gap will look a lot bigger. And 20 years later, it'll be like $80,000 and 30 years later, it'll be $70,000. So your spending does decline because it's kind of, you go from like those go-go to the slow-go to the no-go years. But those are some of the considerations, I think, as
so we're entering the second half of 2020, been quite a year, and that brings us back to COVID and the pandemic. And curious, Steve, what do you hear from your users about how the pandemic is changing, how they're thinking about their retirement planning?
Yeah, good question. So I think one thing we've seen as a business is that people's psychology and how they behave doesn't change. So as the market, you know, as the pandemic kind of ramped up and the market went down, we saw activity drop a lot on our site and for planning in general. And we talked to some of our users and they're like, listen, I know my accounts are down 30%. I don't want to think about it or look at it. And I heard this from other folks that were in the finance space. Basically, their audiences didn't want to look and then also were highly distracted by all the headlines every day about how fast it's spreading and what's happening around the world. So I think that's one thing that we saw. And, you know, we're trying to, on our side, design the software in a way that like encourages people to think about their income versus their assets. So, which is usually moves around a lot less. And so it's a healthier way to look at, you know, think about your finances. I think another thing that's happened is like people are getting a preview of what retirement could be if they are not too thoughtful about it, which is like, you know, I was talking to our family about it, it's like Groundhog Day, right? It's like the same yes. day over and over, right?
It's like, it really is.
What are we doing today? We're going to work, go for a hike, make dinner, not see anybody.
Watch the movie Groundhog Day again.
Exactly.
biggest conversation is, what are we eating tonight?
Exactly. So I think, and I'm seeing some of this in some of these communities, you know, that we're part of, where it's like, oh, well, is this what retirement's going to be like? This doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Like, let's be thoughtful about how we're going to spend our time. So I think there's some of that going on, which is good for folks to kind of fast forward a little bit. But we've also seen some people that didn't worry about it. They were like, hey, listen, you know what? I expected this. So people that think about their finances and kind of have a plan in place, they're like, hey, you know what? I was ready for a 20 or 30% drawdown. And that's, you know, we knew that was going to happen at some point, right? There's going to be huge drawdowns in the future too that are going to be super painful. But in general, the market comes back. I mean, it's been really surprising to me how fast the markets come back. And I think a lot of people are like, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? What's going to happen here? But there's also an argument that we have fast forwarded in time the digitization of our lives. I mean, and that's true, right? Everything's delivered through Amazon now. I'm like playing poker with friends on Zoom at night, you know, instead of physically meeting with them, stuff like that. I mean, it's like we're doing happy hours on Zoom. And there's like different things that, you know, people are doing to compensate and live a, you know, more digital first life. Although I think they're also recognizing the power of like, hey, we are people. We want to connect. We want to see other people in person, you know, as soon as possible and hit the road and go travel and all that stuff. So there's going to be a big, I think, backlash or they're snapping back, which we started to see, right? We were talking about that leading up to this, right? But people, they want to get back out. They want to go to the beach. They want to hang out. Unfortunately, this virus hasn't gone anywhere. And it's like, hey, here you are. Now we're going to infect, you know, the infection rates have jumped up. And so it's, you know, people have to be patient. Yeah, they got to wait. Hopefully the vaccine comes. We got to push this down. Like, and in Europe, they have pushed it down. It's so amazing to look at the data between the US and Europe, where the US has, we're not even out of the first wave. Thing went up, flattened, now it's going up again. In Europe, it went up and it's gone down, way down.
Hey, Europe, Canada, and Japan all have the same curve, and the U.S. really jumped out. And particularly if you take the U.S. curve and back out the Northeast, which is trended, you know, way down, it's a really stunning graphic.
I know, and now we're banned, right? Now we can't go to the EU.
yeah, I know. It's true. I would be heading actually next month, but we would have been. So, how do you think COVID-19 is influencing the FIRE movement?
That's an interesting question, too. It doesn't seem to have slowed it down. So I know the guys over at ChooseFI pretty well, and it seems like their podcast and community are going strong. I think that those folks, the FIRE folks, they're pretty disciplined about and have a strong belief in, you know, the math behind achieving financial independence, which is largely around cutting costs. Mm-hmm. And then investing regularly and investing through downturns. And so I saw this, you know, there was a brief downturn in, I think, December 2019, right? And the market kind of snapped back, mm-hmm. right? And these guys were like, yeah, you know, guess what? Stocks are on sale. Let's keep investing. And then that worked out. And I think with COVID, they're doing it now. More people are getting hit by unemployment. So that's definitely affecting things. And I think it'll depend on how long this downturn lasts. So there is a generational part of this, right? So if you lived through the Great Depression, right, you had that definitely affected a couple of generations. They're much more conservative investors and bigger savers, right? We saw that with the Great Recession too. Well, we saw it with 1999 and the 2008, 2009 Great Recession. But there's a whole bunch of FIRE people that never saw this stuff. They didn't live through it. But if you suddenly are like, hey, guess what? I'm losing my job and I'm burning up my emergency fund. And this goes on for longer than you thought, which they can easily do, then that'll be the big test, right? Can they outlast this? And what do you see on your side?
We see less on the FIRE side, more with people who are rethinking retirement in terms of, do I work longer, which is the more common one, as you were talking about before, the one-year plan. Do I hang around longer? But that leads to some other questions that I'm working with some clients on, which is, can I work longer? For a couple of reasons. One, if I'm working from home longer because I'm in my early 60s, for example, I'm thinking of two particular people, am I going to really be out of the loop when people start to go back in physically and I'm still, mm-hmm. you know, more on the outside? So there's some concern that way. But there's another group, and I'm working with a couple of clients who said, I'm actually going to retire earlier. Mm-hmm. I've been through, to your point, I've been through what it was like after 9/11, that comeback. I've been through the comeback from the 08 piece. I think this is going to be a longer haul, and I think I can accelerate my plan. Yep. So I'm working with a couple people who are actually literally doing that. They were going to be retiring in a couple of years, and they're going to retire in the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, I think per your earlier question, I think you're going to see a lot more people that, you know, start their own companies as a path to getting control. And yeah, the whole question of like how you go back to work, I think is a huge thing. I'm part of WeWork, and yes. That place has been, WeWork, our team is mostly remote, so we use shared spaces sometimes, but that is a totally different vibe, right? Like, well, I don't really go in there anymore. I just go there, get my mail. But it's been, you know, largely empty. It'll be interesting to see how that comes back. But I do think you'll see the number of people over 50, or the percentage of companies started with people over 50, is growing quickly. You know, I think that you're going to see definitely more folks that, you know, use this as an opportunity to kind of step back. Yeah, maybe they leave their traditional career. They kind of get recentered and then start some new company, and they'll use that to control their future more.
And one person I was working with too made the point on the working longer, that working from home might allow him, in his case, to work longer than he had anticipated. He said, because I was never a work from home person, but I can get just as much done, if not more, this way. And he thought by taking out a chunk of the commuting and travel, he found it actually a way to kind of create his own glide path to retirement in a way with less mm-hmm. wear and tear. So I think it depends on the person, where they're at, what they're thinking about. So we humans have a lot of tendencies, and one of them is that we can procrastinate. And you don't have to answer this right away. You can get back to us. But but for someone listening who's put off getting started on their retirement planning, what's your advice for them?
Yeah, you know, someone described, you know, retirement planning as like a urgent should versus an urgent need. And I think, unfortunately, they were right. It's one of these things where it's easy to put off, right? It's kind of painful to think about. A lot of people don't know where to start, and so they don't want to do it. And therefore, they don't do it. And then the data shows us, right? I think the average person has like $25,000 in their 401k, and the average person closer to retirement has like $125,000. It's pretty low numbers. And the reality is you have to be very smart about how you use your assets. So, I mean, that's why I built our site, our company. So, I mean, like, you know, and I hate to be self-serving here, but, you know, you can go to newretirement.com and you can build your own plan for free, right? It'll take 5 to 10 minutes to get started. You know, you'll get educated about kind of what these big levers are across work, right? Saving, investing, but also home equity, healthcare, how you draw your assets down, tax efficiency, which is another huge part of what a lot of folks are really interested in, especially if they have more money, you know, claiming Social Security and health and Medicare and healthcare, like how to think about that and get estimates and what you can, how you can kind of change the curve there. You know, for instance, on our site, we ask you if you smoke or if you have pre-existing conditions. I mean, if you're a smoker, you know, you can expect that your out-of-pocket healthcare costs, which might be $250,000 if you don't smoke, might be $450,000 if you do smoke. So, you know, hey, there's a $200,000 reason to quit smoking, right, and get healthier. It can dramatically change your costs. These are out-of-pocket costs after, you know, Medicare and health, other healthcare premiums. So, you know, you can do it yourself on a, you know, like a new retirement, or go talk to a hourly financial advisor who's a fiduciary or a coach. You know, I think definitely be thoughtful about who you're talking to, though, because there's lots of salespeople and non-fiduciaries out there who can call themselves financial advisors, who may not have your best interests at, you know, at heart. And unfortunately, 80% of the wealth in this country, well, fortunately or unfortunately, is controlled by people over 50. So it's also a big target, right? There's a lot of money out there, but you have to use it really intelligently, I think, to get the most out of it. And you can make a few smart choices about Social Security, drawing down your assets, how you work, how you kind of coordinate things. And it can have a dramatic impact on your income, how long your money lasts, how much of an estate you might have left over for your heirs, and just how well you sleep at night. So, you know, we try to help people put all that stuff together and, you know, at least get started on their own. And then, you know, we also, for our business, we're doing it in a way that we're trying to make our business model completely aligned with people. So we charge people, if they're, you know, there's a software only version for $6 a month, you can get only hourly advice, either from a CFP, a financial advisor, or from a coach who will just help you use the software. but it's only hourly. So we're not trying to do AUM. We're not selling anything. And I think that's a big thing because there's so much misalignment in financial services and hidden fees. It's like healthcare was and kind of continues to be to some degree, right? Where you can't see the pricing on things. And so you don't know where you're being charged. And therefore, and I think most of financial services likes that way because they're making a truckload of money on this, just like healthcare is. But people would make different choices if they saw, you know, if you have $1 million and you have an advisor and they're charging 1%, it's $10,000 a year. I mean, it's just a lot of money versus you pay your lawyer $200 an hour, right? Or your CFP $200 an hour, and then you're done, right? I think that's how advice is going to go in the future. It's going to change.
Well, Stephen Chen, thank you so much for sharing all of this information and insights with us. I know it's going to be very helpful to a lot of people. So thank you and great to talk to you once again.
Yeah, Joe and Dennis, I really appreciate your time and getting to talk with you and your audience. I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing at Retirement Wisdom and looking forward to hearing how this comes out.
Same here. Great. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Have a great week, Steve. Thanks again.
Cool. Thanks. All right.
Dennis, it was great catching up with Steve Chen. What are your takeaways from our conversation?
Yeah, so Steve had a lot of good advice today. It was exciting to hear about his business. When he mentioned the biggest ways in which retirement is different today, he's focused on things that a lot of people hear about, but you know, hopefully can reflect upon and understand. Life expectancy, longevity is certainly shifted. People are definitely, you know, living longer versus years ago. Demographics are shifting. There's a lot of people who will be 65 by the year 2050. I think he said something like 1.5 million. This is a growing demographic. So more and more people are going to be into that next stage of life that we call retirement. One out of three workers over the age of 50 today, and you can imagine that that's going to continue to grow. And then he talked about, obviously, there's huge changes in the way people are working. We touched upon that, and you and him had a good conversation about how that's affected in the pandemic itself and how people may be looking at work a little differently. Then finally, the costs of advice are starting to come down. His cost of financial advice is starting to come down. So he sees these things as levers that are starting to move in the direction of how retirement is actually shifting. We talked about some of the key risks, and he did mention planning for healthcare and long-term care as two major risks, but he also mentioned some of the non-financial aspects, which is people need to really spend some time and to understand what it is that they want to do with their time and examine their purpose. Don't be afraid to try things, because that's how you're going to really learn about what's really next for you and how it fits into your whole model and how it actually, the two of the non-financial and the financial can really, the planning for both things can really align and help you get clarity and confidence in your planning in total. So those are mine, Joe. What about yourself?
Well, I'd highlight three things, and I'd start with just our conversation, as you mentioned, about the pandemic. And what jumped out to me was that people are changing their thinking differently depending on where they're at. Different people have different perspectives on that, and it impacts them in different ways. So I thought that was interesting to compare notes and what we're both seeing, you know, all three of us are seeing in that front. Second was the discussion about it's different when you're in the accumulating phase versus the accumulating assets phase. And he mentioned that financial advisors weren't as interested in his mother's account because she was like on the drawing downside. Mm. But I think, you know, it's just a reminder that there's a different mindset as you enter that too, that can be a little bit of a shock at first for people when those accounts are not going in the direction that you're used to on a long-term basis and getting used to that. And then finally, I think that it's another reminder about don't procrastinate. Retirement planning is complicated. It sounds big. It sounds hard. And it is all those things in some ways, but it's simple to get started. And it's really just a way to find that first step to take if it's something that you've put off. Don't procrastinate.
Really getting started in this is a big part of the game. If you get started, it'll start to roll, gain momentum. Great points. Yeah.
And I think we're all aware that you want to get started on both sides. So you don't want to put off either side. They're both important. The non-financial side is the reason that the financial side's there. That's why you're saving the money for it, to make the most of your time retirement, to make it a great one.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for another Retirement Wisdom podcast, and we'll be talking again very soon.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.